This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, it is just after 6 o'clock. Good morning on Thursday. Yes. At the Burning Platform, back with a vengeance today. We've got Pumi Mashiko. How are you, Pums?
Good morning.
We've got Siasangweni.
How's it?
And later on with the Burning Platform, we'll have Wayne Duvenage, who's, of course, from Auta. He's also well known as the one of the activist CEOs in South Africa who decided he's not going to stand by. Like Pumi always tells us, we've got to be activist citizens. You know, you've got to get involved in politics. Don't just let things happen.
A mandala.
Like, who was it who said that again?
Naomi Campbell.
Jesus.
And, you know, she's a true daughter of Africa, that one.
Oh. Yeah, sure. Wayne headed up the organization Undoing Tax Abuse since its inception in 2012. And, of course, they've been at the forefront of civil society, standing up against government excesses and abuses. And we'll speak to him this morning about things that are going on in the news, stuff that's happening in current affairs, and also some political thoughts around the election results, which, of course, only came out this time last week. Do you remember? They started trickling in.
Now, Sis Pumi, is Wayne your definition of an activist citizen? Is he like the prime example of what an activist citizen should be in your eyes?
Not prime, but out there.
In that ballpark.
Yeah, you know what it is. It is about the fact that people who have decided that this particular aspect I'm going to do something about. And for me, active citizenry is not just about grand gestures, right? It's also the little things. It's like when you get up in the morning, like we used to get up in the morning on a Saturday and you'd have to sweep your little patch of street after sweeping the, you know, so you'd sweep the yard and whatever, right. And then you'd sweep your little patch of street because that's what you had to do because there was going to be nobody coming to sweep the street because those kinds of services were not there. That is active citizenry. Whereas, you know, when you're walking by and you chuck your piece of paper from your gum on the floor, that is not.
That's right.
Right? So sweeping your piece of street is just as much active citizenry as taking up a cause in a grand gesture as starting an outer.
Okay.
So it's little things and it's big things.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is to take all those little things and to turn them into a big thing because people have all the best intentions in the world, but a million little things like picking up papers, all that does is encourage government to ignore your street because it's taken care of. You know, there's entropy. There's a default position of let's do nothing for a lot of people. And then for those people who are, like, I always think that they're those people in every community who are like the wise elders. And they're those people in every community who are the ones you can go and get free therapy from. You can go and talk to. And those are people who make a tremendous difference at the individual level. But they very seldom are able to make a difference in any bigger way than that. And they only have 24 hours in a day. And they still have their own lives as well. So when you can create some sort of organization, and really ARTA exists in opposition to ETOLS, first of all, which was tremendously successful. So I think that he's got a track record there of being able to stand up to just draconian government extortion. There's no other way to describe it. I mean, the price of these roads and what we paid for these international companies to run the whole thing and for SANRAL, which is just vampiric. I mean, SANRAL sweeps in and is just sucking the blood out of the road network. Now, we had some interesting points of view. I mean, I remember Canton in here the other day saying he thinks we should be paying our e-tolls because he reckons that those roads aren't for free and we need to realize that they need to be paid for. But I say we're paying a huge fuel levy. You know, I filled up my tank yesterday. Guess how much it cost me?
Ooh.
And I do that once a week, huh? Now, I've been threatening that I'm going to get rid of this car. It's a gas guzzler. I mean, it's a modern car, so it's not one of these monsters that really chews through, you know, 1,500 rands worth of petrol in a month. It's a diesel car, first of all, which I thought was cheaper at the time, and it was. It cost me 960 rand to fill my car yesterday. Now, you do that four times a month. Yeah.
How much does
your car so much bigger than mine. How is it that my car and your car have...
What does yours take up?
Yeah, it takes up about 900 bucks.
Yeah. Is yours petrol? Yeah, mine's diesel. So maybe there's a differential there.
Mm.
But still, it's crazy, right? Like 900, almost 1,000 rand a week that I have to put in.
Almost 4,000 rand a month.
That's right. Now, that's some people's salary.
Mm.
So I look at this and I go, well, what is the percentage? Something like 70% of that is the fuel levy, which is insane. So where's that money going? That should be the money used for the tolls, to build the roads, to pay the third party claims when there are accidents and that kind of thing. I mean, look, frankly, I think that government shouldn't be a backstop in those situations. Everybody should be insured, or else you shouldn't be allowed on the road. Full stop. You just shouldn't be allowed on the road if you do not have private insurance. And, you know, it's conditional to you getting a car. You shouldn't be able to take a car out of a showroom unless you have personal and car insurance. I mean, that's just makes sense, because that way you're covered, and anyone else who bumps into you is covered on the road, or you bump in too. Doesn't that make sense?
Except that also, those levies also subsidize partly the public transportation system for some people.
Right.
So,
but shouldn't that come from government's budgeting? That shouldn't come out of the fuel levy. The fuel levy is there to maintain infrastructure for roads. It's roads, because that's where roads... You don't use fuel on a train. You don't use fuel not in ships and things the way that we use it on the roads.
You know, budgeting petrol is one of my favorite topics.
The worst topic.
Why?
Anyway.
Why?
Look, there are a few things before we get into all of this, because we can save this for Wayne when he comes in, because there's so much to talk about today. But so Gord Laws, who's on the show on a Wednesday often, he messages us all yesterday on our little WhatsApp group to say, you guys are really ruining my life, because we were talking about this episode of Game of Thrones this week.
Which I still haven't seen.
You haven't seen it either.
Oh, yeah, because you're the perfect person for this.
So many people have been tweeting about it and all sorts of things, right? So I don't wake up at 3 a.m. to watch it.
Okay.
I also don't particularly spend too much energy kind of ducking social media throughout the day.
It hits you.
Also because like spoilers don't bother me. Spoilers really, really, really don't bother me.
Okay.
How? You can still watch something knowing
how it's going to end. I can too.
Yeah.
I don't love it because I want to be the one to choose.
Yeah.
But if it happens, it happens.
It's not the end of the world.
No, I'm not going to beat somebody up in line.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are YouTube videos you can go and look at right now that will tell you what the leaks are, what the spoilers are ahead of time.
I have a friend who has blocked so many words on Twitter specifically pertaining to Game of Thrones.
Shame.
It's like Game of Thrones, GOT, #GOT. It's all of these various characters in there, so that none of the tweets pertaining to this new season will come onto her timeline. She's like that intense.
But people are intense about this show. I mean, there's one episode left, and really it's the... there's been a lot of mystery and there's been a lot of guessing around these episodes. And you heard Nobile yesterday, who was saying...
What?
Sorry, on Monday. Who was furious because he thinks the writers have let everybody down.
Everybody feels like they've rushed this.
So I had a conversation with Rich Mulholland yesterday. And we went out for a coffee in the morning yesterday. And I said to him, what do you think of you know, all this craziness online and how people are obsessed with this show? And he said to me, look, he loves the show too. But the best war... in Game of Thrones, the best battle hasn't been the Night King or Cersei Lannister or the Khaleesi. The best battle has been between the producers who created this show visually out of George R.R. Martin's books and the audience. The real battle is between the audience and these guys.
It is unbelievably fascinating to see how much ownership people have taken of this thing. I mean, so you know that George R.R. Martin,
Yeah, how many R's can you put in a name? George R.R. Martin.
For a very long time, in between seasons of Game of Thrones, people harass him online about finishing the books because the series of books is also not complete.
Right.
Where does he live?
In a log cabin where nobody knows.
I swear, because that's the picture I have in my head.
Well, have you seen what he looks like? He looks like the kind of guy who should be living in a log cabin.
He does. You know, he's not to me like a J.K. Rowling. And yes, J.K. Rowling was a bit of a recluse before Harry Potter went uber mainstream. But she acclimatized to her level of fame. George, to me, I feel like lives in New Zealand and has a plot of land that doesn't want to be bothered.
He's 70 years old.
Yeah, you see, there you don't want to do press junkets and sign a million books. Mm-mm, couldn't be bothered. But sorry, were saying?
Yeah, but it's unbelievable. People, and then there was a meme, there was a very funny meme making the rounds that every time people harass him about finishing the books, he kills another Stark.
Wow. Just to put people in their place.
And that's happened to the showrunners. So that's what's happened to the guys as well, is everybody is hating the way this thing is going, right? That they're abusing them left, right, and center. I love it.
Well, you know, I don't think I hate it. I'm letting this, first of all, what you have to understand if you're a fan of a show, and this is something I had to come to terms with other things that I love that have been interpreted on screen that I didn't necessarily like the way that they came through. Your own imagination and the way that you read a book, you interpret that in pictures in your head, right? Mm. Which is beautiful. That's your imagination at work, and you have your own version of everything in that book. And it's personal, and it's private, and it's intimate, and there's some characters you love and some characters you hate. And you develop your own relationship with all of these things, which is why people love fiction.
And what they sound like. My favorite thing is what they sound like in your head when you know?
And then they put a show like this together, or Harry Potter, or Star Wars, or any of these things. They put it together their way. And then you either have to buy into it lock, stock, or avoid it and be a critic on the outside. Because the fact is, no one is going to interpret it the way you do. But at the same time, they might interpret certain things way better than you. What I love about this series, and so many of the movies and the TV series being produced right now, is they're done on such an epic scale. Mm. Like, there was no way to do this before. Mm. You know, thanks to CGI and all of this stuff, you can have massive castles and cities and dragons and millions of people being burnt alive and, like, things on a scale that are just unbelievable, right?
Millions of people.
Like, I can't imagine that. If I close my eyes, I can't imagine that happening, no matter how good the words are that you give me. So that's amazing. And even if you give me spoilers, even if it doesn't tie in with the books, which I haven't read, by the way, I couldn't make my way through George R.R. Martin's books. There are a bunch of them. I know people who've read all of them. Not for me. I read nonfiction because I like imagining the things that are in there. There sometimes is some stuff you can tie into that's real evidence. But fiction.
You read only nonfiction.
I only read nonfiction. I have read fiction books. I have from time to time read fiction. It's been about 4 years since I picked up a fiction book. Mm. But I like fiction to be imaginary. I like it to be all about pushing the boundaries of your imagination, making you picture things and hear things and smell things and taste things and feel things that you can't from nonfiction. You know, nonfiction is so much more solid and grounded and real and factual and evidentiary. That's very, is that the right or the left brain? Which one is that?
Which in itself can be incredibly, like, mind-blowing.
Oh, sure.
What the actually was going on?
Right.
Yeah, nonfiction can also be like mind bending because you're kind of going, really? Real people did this?
Well, this is where there's an overlap, and the overlap happens in history, right? Because history really is interpretive, and history is largely written by the victor. And this is another conversation I had with Rich yesterday. It's amazing how much we pile into an hour, but he said to me he loves blind history. And he wants to hear an episode on the Duke of Wellington, Wellesley, Arthur Wellesley, who is a fascinating guy, but he was the victor at the Battle of Waterloo. But there aren't that many books about him, and people aren't really, if you show a picture of Wellesley, most people go, oh, that's Napoleon. But Napoleon is the guy he defeated. Mm. Napoleon's much more famous. People know a lot more about Napoleon than they do about Wellesley, right?
People like villains.
They do like villains. And this is the point where people say, oh, history is always written by the victors. Not always so. Sometimes the villains are just more interesting than the good guys. And no matter how history writes them in or writes them out, people like those villains. Go and read about Caligula. Go and read about Elagabalus and Commodus and these Roman emperors who were insane. These are some of the most crank, pot, nutcase, delusional, psychopathic, inbred, narcissistic, wild. You could criticize any of our current leaders. Even the worst. Kim Jong-un looks stable compared to some of the Roman emperors.
It's politics.
Oh, it's amazing.
Well, all of this said and done, though, this isn't the view that Gord Laws has.
Yeah, so the reason I brought Gord up is Gord says to us, no, we're not allowed to. This conversation's out of bounds for Gord. We're not allowed to talk about any of this.
How dare we?
He says, spoiler. Now, he's had from Monday because he could have watched it on.
Why has he not watched it? What is his excuse?
He says he's busy, but I don't believe it because I've looked at his Instagram and his Facebook.
Yes.
And he's drawing pictures and he's putting up fucking versions of himself as a woman. You know, there's that Snapchat filter where you can be a woman or you can be a man. You know that one?
Yes, I'm quite a comely man myself.
Are you actually? Oh. Can we see what, a comely man. Can we have a look at you?
Who uses come on, Pumi, words like that?
Because Pumi was, I saw her fiddling with those filters as well. But Gord is doing all of this and then he can't squeeze in a show. I had to watch Endgame in a hurry because I knew there was shit coming and people would spoil it for me if I didn't. So I got to it.
You made it a priority.
That's right.
I have not watched Endgame.
I won't spoil that for you.
Because the idea of
a movie's slightly different.
Being in a movie for 3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours and 2 minutes.
Yeah, I won't. You know, a movie's different to TV if you ask me, because you still have to go and see this on the big screen. And you want to see a movie like this on the big screen. Let me see what you look like as a man.
Oh, goodness gracious.
You look like someone I know.
Like a Mr. South Africa.
No, you don't. Pumi, you would be not pinky. You would be a shoo-in to Mr. South Africa. Trust me. No. Sia, what do you look like as a girl? Have you done it?
No, I haven't.
Let me show you what I look like. We'll post all of these on screenshot that one.
I have no time for these filters because my sister did one and she sent it to me. She says, I look like it. I'm like, no, I don't look like that. No, not that nasty. Not at all.
So let me show you what I look like as a woman.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Oh.
Look here for me.
Oh, wow.
You look like Miranda.
I look like a Hausfrau from like Velcom. Really, it's bad.
Yes, that's where I was trying to go.
A Putzfrau.
No, I don't like the way I look as a girl. Okay, so we'll put...
All right, so we'll put these up on our Instagram. But this is a big thing that everyone's doing at the moment as well, is this Instagram thing.
Yeah, that's what Gord is very preoccupied with. And now we are what? We are 4 days after the episode premiered.
And he's still cross with us.
Listen, it's not a spoiler after the episode has been on air, guy. It's not a spoiler. The thing is on air. You can have watched it. There are 24 hours in a day.
And there's catch up these days and there's the internet and, you know.
24 hours he had.
So the fact that we have this group now, he's posted saying, just know that I won't be viewing anyone's messages on this group.
I will not be taking part.
You guys could be posting spoilers.
Oh, woe is me.
That's thank you. And that was the moral of the story. That's it.
Well, Pumi's not upset, so that makes me feel better. Because for a moment there, I thought, ooh, are we guilty of being, you know, spoilers?
But
Pumi's right. She hasn't seen it either, and she's not cross.
So. And, you know, it's like this very basic schoolyard mentality. When we weren't even paying attention to you in that way, but now that you've brought it to light, of course we want to taunt you with it. So, I think it was Ben who changed the name of the group, now called it GOT Spoilers.
Yeah, so now it's getting mean.
Of course, now we're going to taunt you with it.
All right, you want some news?
Let's go to the five things.
Always want news.
Okay. Well, first of all, Cyril Matamela.
Silili.
He's been in the news again. He's busy telling us that Eskom is in good hands. He says sacrifices would have to be made to prevent the failure of Eskom, warning that the utility could collapse and so would the country's economy. He was speaking to investors at a Goldman Sachs conference in Westcliff in Johannesburg Wednesday morning. He assured them the country would be run differently to stimulate the economy. It was the first time the president met with investors since the African National Congress's victory at polls last week. It's just too important to fail, he said. It holds all the fortune at an economic level and the social life of our country in its hands. Ramaphosa said South Africa couldn't afford the collapse of the parastatal. Obvious. Isn't that obvious? How come it's taken them so long? So he says, labor, private sector, and our own communities would have to play a role. Without Eskom, our community stalls. In February, he revealed the utility would split into three entities. But Ramaphosa told investors the restructuring of Eskom had subsequently been widely welcomed, despite concerns from the labor unions in the beginning. Do you believe him?
No.
He again gave the assurance that the state-owned company would not be privatized. God, he is doing a tightrope walk. It's not going to be privatized, but we're going to split it into three. We're not going to fire anybody, but we're going to fire half the people.
Hey, Kunzema.
Spare me.
Yeah. Gooby.
So I don't know who to believe here. And frankly, he's going to say this to a bunch of investors. What's he going to say to the labor unions? The opposite. We know this. The Chief Justice, Mokgweng, told Eyewitness News that he doesn't know if the National Prosecuting Authority was doing enough to tackle corruption, which is interesting because you know what people say about the judge. That he's a very outspoken and quite activist judge, and some people are uncomfortable with the blurring of lines between the executive, judiciary, and legislature. But where there's a vacuum, leaders will usually step in.
Well.
You want to proffer an opinion there, Pums?
Mokgweng.
Mm-hmm. So nice you say it twice.
Yes.
That one.
There's a, you know, that guy, man. That guy is problematic, man.
Why?
That guy is problematic for many, many reasons. And I think the first one is that huge palace, that palatial office.
That he's built on the side of the N1.
That he's built far away from any. So we've had how many chief justices in the Chas new Gilson, dispensation?
We had Langa. Who else did we have?
And all of them, ne? We're quite content to be by the courts, close to the courts. This particular individual.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that building. It's big, unnecessary. I don't know who's in it.
Absolutely. The office of the Chief Justice. Why? Why is he not at the courts? Why must he be over there far away, insulated from the people?
Well, okay, let's judge him then on the work, though.
Yeah, on the work. But you see, he's also been allowed maybe too much of a free rein because he was this guy who suddenly had political clout and he suddenly had popular opinion behind him. And maybe he's just taken advantage of that a little bit too much. Am I right, Paul?
South Africans are such a joy to observe because first when he was appointed, because he was appointed by Jacob Zuma, everyone was like, this guy. Now, every now and again, you know, has a blip about something that they like to hear, that they're happy to hear. Then it's all of a sudden, activist judge, this guy.
Right.
Come on, man.
Well, he says the NPA has for years faced allegations of political interference, with some claims this has led to cases being shelved. The prosecuting body was also criticized for not going and acting immediately on the special investigating unit report on corruption at facilities company Posasa. 10 years after corruption claims emerged, Mokgweng was asked if he thought the NPA was doing enough to act on corruption. He said, I don't know whether the NPA is doing enough to tackle matters of corruption. I know that there are a few cases of corruption that have been set before the court. Whether that's enough or not is not an answer I am able to provide. But that is an answer. Politics from a judge.
Okay, this for me is an approving.
No, I'm kind of with her on this one. All right, and then this is interesting. So Donald Trump is visiting South Korea in June to meet his counterpart, the South Korean President Moon Jae-in, over efforts to persuade North Korea to scrap its nuclear weapons arsenal.
Hey, he's making things happen.
It will be the second meeting between the pair since the collapse of a summit between Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un in Hanoi in February after they failed to reach a deal on nuclearization and denuclearization. President Trump and President Moon will continue their close coordination efforts to achieve the final fully verified denuclearization of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the White House said in a statement using North Korea's official name. The dovish South Korean president, who has long backed engagement with the nuclear-armed North, brokered the talks between Trump and Kim, which led to the first landmark summit in Singapore last June. So he's made he makes progress on North Korea, then North Korea are good for a little while, then they start kicking again, then he has to get involved again, so we'll have to see what happens. So we obviously haven't, this is not a finished story, this is not a closed case yet. That's Trump and North Korea, the real story, not Trump and South Korea. And then the major tech firms on Wednesday pledged to come up with a new measure for stamping out violent extremist content on the internet amid growing pressure from governments pushing for action in the wake of massacres in New Zealand in March.
What do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm nervous when you tell Google, Twitter, Facebook, and Microsoft now you have to deal with extremism because these are private companies. And I'm not sure that they're in any position to make these calls. They can obviously control their own little thing, but when they all get together, that's a very powerful lobby that can suddenly decide all kinds of things about what is and isn't acceptable. Imagine if Pumi has a point of view, as many of us do on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google, wherever, and she puts it out there because she thinks it's a valid point of view. But someone in Facebook thinks, wait a second, I don't agree with Pumi. And for no good reason other than they don't agree with Pumi, which seems to be the way people react these days to things. They shut her down. They close down her post. They remove it for community standards. And then suddenly, Pumi's voice is silenced. Do you think that's going to stop her from being an extremist? Not Pumi, obviously, but if it's someone more extreme? If someone suddenly is shut down on Facebook, do you think that's going to make the thing worse or better? Because when you don't air these things, these people take it underground. And that's where it festers. And that's where they arm themselves. And that's where they plan things. I don't know. I think you shut this stuff down. First of all, law enforcement doesn't get as much information on them because they're banned from a platform. And they know they have no place to express themselves. So you can't hear what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't prevent craziness from ensuing. And second of all, you don't give them a pressure release. So they're talking to only people who are like-minded, who are not on the internet. And in other words, they're only in their bubble.
And there's nobody to like shut them down. But you know what fascinates me the most about these, about online lives, that these second lives that we all have online, is in the minds of all of us that are online, we kind of think that that's the world. Right, but it's not. If there's anything that a lot of people have learned rather rudely over the past election, is that online is not the world.
Oh, it's not the full.
It's not the whole
spectrum.
Picture. It's
right.
Not the whole picture.
Correct.
It's actually as many people as there are online, there are many more who are not.
Correct.
And aren't living their life in that space. So it's not, you know, it's such a. It's a crazy little thing that we have to get our minds over, all of us.
There are billions of people on these networks, and what they've said is that Google, Twitter, Facebook, and Microsoft have all got together with the leaders of France, New Zealand, and other countries in Paris to unveil what they call the Christchurch Call of Voluntary Commitments for Online Platforms. It was named for a city where a gunman killed 51 people at two New Zealand mosques 2 months ago, while broadcasting his rampage live on Facebook via a head-mounted camera. Social networking giant has faced withering criticism since the attack after the horrific footage was uploaded and shared millions of times despite efforts to remove it. The call is a roadmap to action. New Zealand Premier Jacinda Ardern said at a press conference with French President Emmanuel Macron, "It commits us all to build a more humane internet which cannot be misused by terrorists for their hateful purposes," she said.
The Prime Minister is just going around making the most of this moment.
Listen, if anyone's cashed in on this Christchurch massacre, it's Jacinda Ardern. I'm sorry.
Look, and I'm not speaking ill of her intentions if she feels this is all good.
I'm speaking ill of her intentions. I'm telling you, there is nothing worse than someone who uses a tragedy, and all politicians do it at some level. But there's nothing more distasteful to me than someone who takes a tragedy like this and uses it to punt their political agenda. It's revolting. It's like the gun control people that come running out when someone like, you know, there's an obvious political agenda going on here at the same time as there are rights being infringed upon.
Yeah, you guys fascinate me. You, Gareth, you know my analogy about dogs, right?
Mm.
Do you know this? My
analogy about dogs?
Yeah. Dogs bite, right?
Yes.
Dogs bite. And where I'm from, no matter what kind of dog, even if it's that like Mkotoi that doesn't have an owner that's in the street, that like, what do they call it? Like, you know, like these wild dogs. They don't
like
have
a
them
mutt,
in,
like a brak.
Yeah, but they don't have them in the suburbs, right? But in the hood, there's a lot of dogs that are ownerless
around,
that are just running around in packs. So generally, dogs bite. So when you approach a dog, when I approach a dog, I approach it from that perspective, that a dog will bite you. That particular dog must prove to me that it will not bite me. You know how you go to people's houses like, oh, this dog doesn't bite. Just, it's such a friendly dog.
Next thing.
It just wants to smell you.
Approach every dog like it's going to bite you.
So is this
your... And until it has proven to you that it will not bite you, that this dog will not bite you, that particular dog you can treat differently. Same with politicians, yo. Politicians are power hungry. Politicians will use whatever they can to advance their particular agenda.
Uh-huh.
Approach every politician from that perspective until that particular politician proves to you that they are different from the norm of politicians. The dog will bite you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
see, it's a good analogy. Huh?
That's the lesson of the day.
Elon Musk's SpaceX was due to launch 60 small satellites into low Earth orbit on Wednesday, part of his rocket company's plan to sell internet service beamed from space to fund his grander interplanetary ambitions. In a call with reporters ahead of the evening launch, the billionaire entrepreneur praised the fundamental goodness of his mission. See, I also don't like people who say, oh, this is good. This is definitely for good. Because he says... the mission is to expand internet connectivity globally, but cautioned that success was far from guaranteed. Look, at least he's doing something. Musk said he expects launch services revenue to top out at $3 billion a year, making Starlink key to generating the cash that privately held SpaceX needs to fund Musk's larger dream of developing a new craft capable of flying, paying customers to the moon, and eventually trying to colonize Mars. You gotta have grand ideas, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We think this is a key stepping stone on the way towards establishing a self-sustaining city on Mars and a base on the moon, said Musk, who is also the chief executive officer of Tesla.
Kana, what was the Tesla's grand plan about its production line and how many cars they would be having?
Yeah, they never reached
that. Where are we on that one?
They've got problems.
Just hold on to a bit of hope, maybe.
In a related story, and then we'll move on. But Tesla's delivery team have been gutted in recent job cuts, apparently. They announced last month a second round of job cuts to rein in costs. So this is a recent story from just a couple of months ago. All right, let's move on.
Elon Musk, man.
Yeah, who doesn't? It's cool. All right, so Bitcoin still hovering around 8,000. It's just under $7,935. And Ethereum's gone up nicely to $255 if you're still watching those, but still nowhere near the highs of 2 years ago. There's what you need to know this morning in terms of those numbers and those statistics and those bits of information. Let's turn our attention to Sia Sangweni now, who has the rest for us. Sia has a look at what's good, said by Sia. This is your moment to take stock of the happy things that are going on in the world, or at least those that are making a positive difference. Go ahead, Sia.
Yeah, just making a bit of a difference. I just thought I should bring this story up this morning. After yesterday, we all saw the news. Youth unemployment is at 55.2%. hold on to yourself. Don't freak out too much. I guess this might make you feel a little better. A 6-year-old in South Africa is claiming in the midst of his classmates saying, I want to be a lawyer one day. I want to be a doctor. Well, he says by 18, he wants to be a self-made millionaire, creating jobs for millions of unemployed youth South Africans. And look, at 6 years old, I think he's right on his way. His name is Umphile Mabitsela, and his idea to create a business all started a couple of months ago. He's in grade 2 currently, and they had a class project, and as he was undertaking this project, he actually discovered that he has a bit of a passion for crafts and just working with art in that way. And he thought, at 6 years old, with the help of his mother, why don't we actually turn this into something? So that's when the grade two pupil and the six-year-old started his very own stationery company called Quirk Quirk Incorporated with the help of his mother, Prudence. I actually think this is so cute because he's created a whole website for it as well, quirkquirk.com. And he really is creative in hand making all of these bits of stationery. And the mere fact that it's only been around for a couple of months but has sold a lot, he now goes, okay, well, what else can we do with this? And I actually was on the website, I saw what they were selling, and really is nice and affordable. But they've like really taken down this idea and thought about it very seriously. What they hope to do with it now is, already they've hired 2 people, by the way, at 6 years old, he's hired 2 people to help him with this. And because he thinks he wants to keep it with young people, they are now planning on expanding the next few months with the introductions of pens and diaries and with his stationery line, and that the business will soon only be franchised to children under the age of 15. I'm like, Umphile, okay. All right, you're doing some things. You're really handy. 6 years old, hires 2 people, works with his own mother, already has a full-fledged website, and things are selling really well and very affordable, and he wants to franchise it out there to more children. He says that he wants to train these kids himself, and he says besides making millions one day, he also sees himself being president of the country. Oh, so yes. Let's see what happens there. I think this is so, so cool. So in the midst of the 55.2%, how about you think of Umphile here, 6 years old and in grade 2 and already has his very own South African stationery line. I think that's good to hear this morning, well, especially.
That's so cute.
There's someone else who's an established businessman and politician who says he'll be president one day.
Oh?
Yes. Yeah, let's take a listen.
That's a good turn.
Yeah, no, seriously, here's someone who really believes that, and maybe we should put him in Sid by Sia tomorrow.
Defined experience.
Are you saying?
Defined experience.
Are you saying your experience at SABC?
My experience. No, no, no. Let me tell you. My experience is huge even in politics. I have run politics behind the scenes.
That's all. Yeah. Thank you guys.
But you don't know what you are talking about when you talk about experience. Because you can't define experience. Experience, you can only acquire experience if you perform a certain duty. That's why people discriminate against young people, because they want experience.
That's about to end. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Vladimir Sinning. Power. I love power.
Yeah, what power? Know how to use power.
He doesn't think it's at all ironic that during the time that he was in charge of the SABC and people were saying to him, you're running this from a political point of view, and he was saying, no. Our journalists are credible and objective. Now he's suddenly saying, no, behind the scenes, I was running it politically.
You know,
he doesn't see any irony in revealing himself.
What this election has revealed to us, the broader South African public, about Hlaudi Motsoeneng, because when he was at the SABC, he was very protected. You know, he was behind.
Sure he was, yeah.
We never got to see the extent to which the man was crazy. And, you know, it has revealed such shocking, delusional and megalomaniac tendencies, right? I was thinking, spare a thought for those executives working for this man every day at the SABC.
Can you imagine?
Imagine having to come to work every day and this is what you're faced with. This is your boss.
Yeah, you got a lunatic like that on the way. Uh-uh. Terrifying, right?
Phew.
Yeah.
You? It's very bad. It's very bad. I mean, this guy, you know, there's that clip that's been making the rounds of him going, I want power. Even Andile Mtitama is laughing. Even Andile, yeah. When one crazy guy right. finds you so crazy
even the other crazy guy is laughing at you. That's something. I'll tell you what, an achievement.
Oh Lord.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this whole, right. that whole thing, just watching. And there was a time as the numbers were coming in and he was nowhere to be seen. Like nobody was talking to him. He didn't come to the ROC. It was insane, right? There was a time when I was genuinely worried about him. I thought like he could come to some kind of harm.
He might throw himself in front of a train or something.
Has anybody? Yeah.
But no chance of that.
That was at the time when I was still thinking that there's some kind of thought process that happens, that there's some kind of reality filter for him as well.
There's a cognitive process that takes place. There isn't.
None whatsoever. None whatsoever.
He is a unique creature to have lived to adulthood with such a defunct brain. There's no other way to put it. I think they must study him. I would love someone to study. Something happened. Something physiologic. I was saying to Sia the other day. It was on Tuesday we spoke about Claudie. The hardware is corrupt. It's not the software. Software is education and all of those things. With him, the hardware is actually screwed. You know how you sometimes try to open a file on your computer and it says, this file is corrupt, won't open?
It's very hectic. It's very hectic, but you know, Sia, we were just talking about the thing about politicians, because another thing that we watched unfold to all our shock and horror with, I always now, Mzwane Lemanye.
Yes.
Right?
Don't mention the J name. No.
Man, you know, rebranding sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. Like that guy. Now, classic politician, right? When the board was looking like he's not getting a seat, he's not going anywhere. He was then rabble rousing, getting everybody into a tiz about there's a problem.
We've got to challenge the elections.
There's a problem with the numbers. There's a problem with the numbers. There's a problem with the counting. He gets everybody. He gets like 34 other people into a tiz with him.
Mm-hmm.
To say we have to challenge this thing. He gets his two bloody seats, and all that means is he's now got a secure job for the next 5 years.
And then he shuts up.
Then he's like, no, the IEC must be commended for a job well done.
Turns like this.
No, he's on the inside. It's like we're outside the club. We're all fighting with the bouncers to get in. He gets in. He's like, he's not getting.
There's
us
no all
in.
For one, one for all spirit. Not at all.
No honor among thieves.
You're looking towards the wrong person for
we
that.
We have one. Politicians. We have one.
I'm very excited.
The dog will bite you.
There we go. The Burning Platform coming up with Wayne Duvenage, who's going to join us. Of course, you know Wayne from Outa. He was the former CEO of Avis, president of the South African Vehicle Renting and Leasing Association. And of course, he has been true to following the call to make a change. He also has written a couple of articles recently, which we'll talk about, and get into some of the politics, which we've already started to talk about now. But there's so much more to get into. Oh, trust me, we're going to make a meal of this.
Yes.
All of that's on the way.
So can we just quickly discuss, since it is in the news and why not?
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing of youth unemployment standing at 55.2%, looking at the first quarter of the year.
Terrifying.
And trust our president to, you know, give out a statement like this. He's now calling on the private sector to invest in the youth and offer them jobs.
Sure.
That's what he feels like. Well, change the nation. Yeah,
well, that's not invest, Mr. President. You supposedly were in the private sector for some time. You clearly didn't learn enough about job creation. It's not a question of creating jobs. It's a question of creating a space that's favorable to business so that business can exist, so that people can chase profits and employ more people to grow those profits. Mm. So you've chicken before the egg.
Yeah, there's
or
a chain
the egg
reaction,
before the
yeah.
chicken, but this is not an understanding of basic economics that you're displaying here. And the private sector, of course, want to. It's in their interests to grow their businesses, to employ more people, to become bigger, to expand. This is what people want in Britain. You don't have to tell business to do that. Just create the environment that makes it possible for them to do that.
Yeah, he also
cut some of the red tape.
He also said that the unemployment rate keeps me awake at night.
No, it doesn't.
Adding, the key mandate I have as president is to make sure that our focus is on jobs.
Do you think he means it? Who knows? Dogs.
You know, the president does have 4 kids of his own.
Yes, he does. And
so maybe
he's talking about maybe he's talking about his own children.
Maybe it keeps him awake at night, wondering, these kids, are they ever going to leave my house?
Exactly. Get off the state's pay.
We don't know.
All right. On the way, the burning platform brought to you by Nando's. Looking forward to that. That's coming right up. Cliffcentral.com, Thursday morning. It's the 16th of May, if you're watching the clock.
This is Cliffcentral.com.